Good morning. Everyone can hear me. Okay. Before I begin, I want to share a small piece of personal news. This past week, on Tuesday, I defended my doctoral dissertation. My research focused on suffering and spirituality and liberation from a Christian perspective and how it relates to disability. So I'm really grateful to be finally finished, very relieved, and I'm excited to share with you this morning a small part of that work. In particular, I really wanted to focus on the scriptural image of the suffering servant, one that I've wrestled with and we often encounter during Holy Week. I still struggle with this image, especially as it comes out of Isaiah 53, which was read earlier. And I want to offer one way of reading Isaiah 53, as well as John 13, which is commonly interpreted as the suffering servant, illustrated in John 13. Many of us might carry an inherited or reflexive understanding of what the suffering servant means. When we hear suffering servant, especially as it's read in Isaiah 53, we tend to imagine the suffering servant as someone who is, one, despised or rejected, cast off, socially unwanted; two, without agency, a very passive figure, someone that has things happen to them rather than someone who acts; and three, someone who is spiritually elevated. The suffering servant is, their pain becomes holy; or four, an object of pity, someone we feel sorry for rather than someone we recognize as having power. And when this image of suffering servant settles in our theology, it doesn't stay abstract. It actually comes into our daily life and it shapes how we see real people. We begin to project that image onto lives we interpret as marked by suffering, especially those whose bodies or circumstances do not fit our cultural standards of strength, independence, or productivity. Sometimes suffering is very, very real, the result of illness, injustice, exclusion, or harm. But sometimes what we label as suffering is actually our discomfort with difference. Disability, for example, is often treated as synonymous with suffering. It's equated. And yet, many disabled people will tell you that what wounds them is most deeply is not their own bodies, but what harms them is the physical and social barriers of the world around them. Stairs without ramps, silence without captions, communities without access, and especially assumptions without understanding. In other words, suffering is often socially produced. And when we merge this image of suffering servant with our assumptions about certain bodies, we risk turning people into symbols. We romanticize endurance and spiritualize exclusion. We turn tragedy into virtue and call it God's will. Personally, I find a powerful response to this in the work of display theologian and activist Nancy Eastland. There's her on the screen now in this green and yellow blouse and scarf, and she's sitting in her motorized scooter, and there's her book, The Disabled God, Toward a Liberatory Theology of Disability. Nancy Eastland was an associate professor of sociology of religion and display studies at Emory University's Candler School of Theology in Atlanta, Georgia. She also consulted with the United Nations on its Convention on the Rights and Dignity of Persons with Disabilities. She helped bring the insights of the secular American disability rights movement into theological discourse. And she shaped conversations within the church about disability as a matter of justice and human dignity, not tragedy. Eastland herself was disabled, as you can see on the screen. She had a cognitive bone defect in her hips. And by the age of 13, she had undergone 11 surgeries. So she knew pain pretty intimately. And yet she resisted the idea that disability should be reduced to personal individual suffering. She argued that what disables people, what disables her, is often not their body, it's her own body, but it's the physical and social barriers that are around them. Inaccessible buildings, narrow definitions of normal, communities that exclude rather than accommodate. And her book, The Disabled God, which we see on the screen, is widely recognized as the beginning of disability theology, as a distinct field. So she bridged the secular disability studies and theology, and she really insisted that disabled people are not objects of pity or charity, but members of oppressed and marginalized community whose experiences must shape how we understand God. So she argued that Christ becomes disabled through the crucifixion, through violence, and retains his disability in the resurrection. He has scars in his hands and feet, which bear the marks of that violence. In doing so, Christ stands in solidarity with disabled people. She pushes back against this normative, able-bodied image of Jesus and instead offers a disability-centered vision of the divine. So she writes, make sure the quote is up there. Quote, "I saw God in a sit-puff wheelchair, that is, the chair used mostly by quadriplegics, enabling them to maneuver by blowing and sucking on a straw-like device. Not an omnipotent, self-sufficient God, but neither a pitiable, suffering servant. In this moment, I beheld God as a survivor, unpitying and forthright. I recognized the incarnate Christ in the image of the those judged not feasible, unemployable, with questionable quality of life. Here was God for me," end quote. So to give you a better idea of what this kind of wheelchair looks like, I've put on the screen a picture of a TikTok influencer, Janie Carter, in her own sit-puff wheelchair. You can see that there's a small tube that rests near her mouth. So when she gently sips or puffs air into that tube, she can move forward, backward, left, right. Her breath becomes motion. This assistive device enables Janie to move through the world with agency. And that is the image Eastland saw when she imagined Christ. Not a helpless figure, not a tragic body, not an object of pity. But God is disabled. A God whose body bears limitation, who looks and moves the world differently from what is considered normal and able, and yet remains fully active and present. For Eastland, to say God is disabled is to say God stands in solidarity with those whose bodies are marked as different, that divine power does not depend on conformity to cultural standards of ability, beauty, or productivity. So in this vision, disability is not erased, it is dignified, it is desired. And here's the crucial point. Eastland says Christ is not a pitiable suffering servant. She says that for a reason. Within disability theology, the figure of Isaiah 53, suffering servant, has drawn a lot of scrutiny. For generations, the Christian interpretation of Isaiah 53 is as a messianic prophecy about Jesus. And many see Jesus kneeling in John 13, washing the disciples' feet, as an embodiment of that servant. But it's not that simple, because if we continue to understand suffering servant in the shallow terms Eastland rejects, as passive, tragic, spiritual, valuable, just because of pain, then Isaiah 53 can become quickly dangerous. A shallow reading only hears the words despised and rejected. An excerpt of Isaiah 53:2-3 is on the screen now. It turns the servant into a prototype of redemptive suffering, as though the suffering itself is what saves. When that logic moves from Christ to real people, especially vulnerable people, including disabled people, harm follows. We must be careful not to turn Isaiah 53 into a model that glorifies suffering in our day-to-day lives. I don't think the problem is Isaiah 53 in and of itself. It's really how we read it, how we apply it. And the way I read Isaiah 53, even if it still struggle with the text, I see that the text is showing is revealing violence and exposes what the world does to the servant. It presents the servant as anything really but passive. The servant is not dragged unwillingly, but the servant accepts this. The text portrays someone who knowingly walks a path to suffer alongside humanity. Not a helpless victim, but someone is a willing agent. While the servant suffers tremendously at the hands of others, the text does emphasize intention, resolve, and participation in God's work. If we read Isaiah 53 as not a blueprint for suffering to glorify it, but rather as a revelation of God entering into this world with pain, with violence, but with agency and purpose also, then it aligns with what Eastland saw. The servant is not pitiable, it's not tragic. The servant has agency, even when despised and rejected. And when we turn to John 13, I see that kind of servant. Jesus kneels and washes the disciples' feet. It is a task that is the lowest in the household. It is the work of a servant. Dusty roads and sandaled feet. It's not symbolic politeness. It is dirty work. It's embodied humility, and it's divine. So when John is careful to tell us that before Jesus kneels, Jesus says he acts knowing that he had come from God and was going to God. He knows who he is. Jesus knows that where he comes from, where he's going. He kneels not out of humiliation. He's not diminished, but because he is secure in his identity and who he is and what his purpose is. This act, this very intentional act, takes place on the threshold of his death. It foreshadows what is coming, betrayal, crucifixion, violence, and yet he kneels anyway. So he's not a passive victim, he's one who freely chooses. So this is not a servant crushed by fate. It is a servant who moves toward suffering without surrendering his identity. And we see that the resurrection does not erase that identity. It will vindicate it with the scars in his hands and feet that remain. In washing their feet, Jesus enacts solidarity. He lowers himself without losing who he is. He serves without becoming pitiable, and he chooses this act of love, of divine love. That, for me, is where I see the suffering servant. And if Christ can kneel in solidarity with those judged not feasible, unemployable, with questionable quality of life, then the church cannot be a place of pity. As Eastland says, quote, "The disabled God defines the church as a communion of justice," end quote. This is a community where difference is not erased, but dignified, where no one is reduced to a symbol or romanticized for their pain, and where love kneels down to do the dirty work. Amen.